Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Sans Pants Radio, we know your secrets. Hey everyone, just a very quick announcement. Movie Maintenance is doing a live show in Melbourne on Sunday the 17th of December at 3 p.m. at Some Velvet Morning in Clifton Hill. Tickets are $5 each or free for all Sans Pants Plus members. For more details, just head to sanspantsradio.com/live.
Welcome to this week's episode of Movie Maintenance, where some films just need fixing. I'm Kath.
I'm Damien.
I'm Carney.
And this week, Thor Ragnarok.
Which I really, really liked.
It was great. It was a lot of fun.
I had heaps of fun.
Yeah.
Kathy, did you like it?
Yeah, I loved it. I literally not tweeted, but put on Facebook about it while I was still in the cinema before I made it to the end, just because I knew I was enjoying it that much.
What did you put on Facebook?
I wrote, Thor, fuck yeah.
Okay.
Why were you on your phone during a film?
I wish I didn't reveal this information to you.
It's really frustrating.
I literally like 5 minutes ago denied that I would ever go on my phone in the cinema. And then I just admitted to it. I did it guilty.
If Carney had been in that cinema with you, he would have given you that over-the-shoulder look of judgment and a little bit of a...
I was just so excited.
I would have wanted to have a go at her, but I would have sat there scared and be like, no, I'm not going to confront...
It would have been the look, but that would have been it.
Okay, that's well, here's my thing, right? I went into that film with actually a fair amount of apprehension because I used to love Michel Gondry. And then, of course, the Green Hornet happened, and that was just a... I'm still traumatized.
I had fun watching the Green Hornet.
Did you?
On the first watch.
Yeah, I think it was one of those like circumstances of the day type thing where I'd had a really shit day and a friend of mine was like, let's go see Green Hornet. And I watched it and I just laughed and I had like a good time after a shitty day. But I watched it recently on TV and I was like, oh my God, this film sucks.
Yeah. And I guess also like a little bit with Darren Aronofsky for Noah to a lesser extent. But I was kind of this belief that these visionary directors, right, that have these visual styles that are so and can tell emotional stories that are so interesting and so compelling and so unique don't transfer to studio films. Like in the same way, like I don't actually want to see a Wes Anderson superhero film. I mean, I kind of do.
You never will.
I never will.
But in the same time, you see like he's very good at what he does and that the what makes these brilliant minds so brilliant is their inability to fit a square peg through a round hole. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
And my feeling, Taika Waititi is my favorite director of all time. Mm. Boys, borderline my favorite film.
Sure.
What We Did in the Shadows. Oh, right. I've never laughed that so hard.
Yeah.
I think he's brilliant. And I was really apprehensive because I was like, I love this director, but I've been hurt before. You know what I mean? Like, I was like, fuck. And I would, it'll hurt so much more for a bad Taika Waititi film.
Yes.
As opposed to just like a bad superhero film or just an average superhero film. I'm going to level with you guys. I also do not enjoy superhero films because the most important thing for me in a film is that I can't know what the ending's going to be. I love mystery. It's, you know, thrillers are my favorite genre. And superhero films, you always know what happens at the end. So I was like, even if he does a good job, am I going to like it? Because I don't like this genre. And that's going to hurt too because I love Tiger. But I got half an hour into the film and I was like, this is fucking fun.
Have there been any films in the genre that you've liked though?
Well, The Dark Knight.
That's
but
fair.
But that, I mean.
It's pretty universally loved.
Oh, that was an exceptional film. That's probably my top 10 favorite films.
Yeah, I mean,
of all
time. And that one doesn't really fit the mold of what we've come to consider as like the standard superhero movie.
It kind of transcends the genre, doesn't it? It's more of like a crime drama that just happens to have Batman.
It's borderline a thriller because that film, when you were watching The Dark Knight, you genuinely didn't know what was going to happen.
Oh, yeah.
And that, in that sense, it, or how it was going to end more specifically. And that is why I think it worked for me as opposed to other superhero films.
It's like what you're saying. If you reduce Batman to just sort of a pretty persistent cop in that story, it would work 100%.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Where most superheroes, that is clearly not the case.
It's what I want to see more though from superhero films where they actually pick a genre and go, let's try and do that, but with the characters that we have. And it's not something that you're probably going to see when you have things like the MCU where everything's like, everything's kind of got to be the same yeah. and that sort of thing. Captain America's probably come closest to yep. trying to do it. Whereas, like, you know, the first Winter Soldier. Well, that one too, but Winter Soldier was more of like a sort of almost like a political thriller
yeah,
to some
a bit
extent.
Of a spy thriller, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, it was actually. Wonder Woman, I guess, is the only other film. And I didn't enjoy it as much as The Dark Knight. But again, I guess that had, you know, with Chris Pine's character dying, I didn't see that coming.
Right.
To yep. be honest with you.
Did the Chris Pine death surprise you more because it's Chris Pine and you thought, oh, if we've got him in our franchise, then we're going to use him again?
No, because, like, well, it's not Marvel, DC. Yep. There's so many names. I mean, Thor literally killed Anthony Hopkins. Like, I don't think Chris Pine is so indispensable that. Chris Pine's leaving? Like, yeah, okay.
Chris Pine and Hopkins are on different sort
yeah,
of levels.
Yeah, that's my though. Point. Like yeah, Hopkins yeah. is a lot higher for me. Like,
oh, no, but I would say, like, in terms of acting ability, obviously Anthony Hopkins is kind of up there almost on his own.
Right.
Some yeah. parts, but, like, in terms of, like, bankability to a franchise, Chris Pine's, like, a huge star, whereas Anthony Hopkins, everyone knows he's sort of been on autopilot for, like, 10 years. So it's kind of like, I've been waiting for him to die since the first Thor film, to be honest.
His character, I mean.
Right.
I would agree, but Wonder Woman as a character or as an image in pop culture eclipses Chris Pine's star power.
Oh, yeah. Sure. Yeah, definitely.
Does
yeah.
that make sense?
Yeah, yeah. It's not yeah. like Chris Pine's gone, Wonder Woman's going to fail on it. No, that's not what I mean. I just mean that in terms of, because he's a pretty big star in Hollywood. And I was just yeah. surprised that they didn't manufacture a way to keep him around or something.
I don't think he's big enough.
But they also would have had to age him.
Absolutely. They would have had to do some sort of, let's freeze him in time, like Captain America.
Kind of a thing, I guess.
I think like the only actor that I think exists now that is so significant, I guess, in the box office would be Jennifer Lawrence. I can't think of any other actor that I'm like, cannot kill that person off. Every other actor, I'm like, yeah, you could with the right franchise.
Yeah.
Right.
It'd survive. You know what I mean? She's the only one.
I don't know if I agree. You could kill her off out of X-Men and
well, I mean, they may, as it turns out. I may be wrong, but she's like, she makes serious money and everyone loves her. She's amazing.
So to go back to Thor.
Yeah.
Because I still found it a fairly. It was a lot of fun and it definitely had a different tone and style, but it still felt just like a Marvel superhero movie. So was there still, like you said, you know, you like when you don't see the ending coming, did you feel that for this movie?
Well, yeah, in truth, I did not see Asgard being destroyed. You know, I knew that Thor would come out on top at the end, which was not disappointing. I mean, I don't want to see him fail, but at the same time, like whenever he was like, I'm so down, I'm like, all right, buddy, like give it half an hour and you'll be fine. But Asgard being destroyed, that whole thing, and I, you know, the whole like the emotional arc of Asgard being a place, being people and not a place.
Yeah.
I thought that was, I didn't see that coming at all. So, yeah, it certainly surprised me in ways that other superhero films didn't. Because it surprised me, those are pretty huge stakes. Another issue I have with superhero films is that they either take the stakes they usually take the stakes like, oh, New York is going to get destroyed.
Yeah, it's normally end of the world.
And it's like, fuck, like, it's true. I can't get on board that. I thought Deadpool did a good job of keeping the stakes feeling like we can all relate to that. And I guess Asgard is maybe like it's a whole city.
It was an end of the world.
This time I got on board it. Maybe because it actually did get destroyed.
I think maybe if it
didn't, I'd be like, I'd put it in that category of like, New York's going to go down. But because it did, I was like, fuck, they followed through.
Tiger
Waititi, cool. Like he really because fucked with that world. I like that.
The model for like most films would have been to have Asgard under threat and then they save the day at the end and everything's fine, which would have fallen into that category, being like, oh, for fuck's sake, comic book movies. But yeah, they went out on a limb and destroyed the world, which is big. And it's big for the future of
that
franchise.
And I've no doubt that they've planned. And like, if you know the Thor Ragnarok stories through the comic books.
Does that happen in the comic
books? That happens, one, in the mythology. The original mythology is Ragnarok is the end of days, but it's almost the end of a cycle. And Ragnarok is as much about rebirth as ending something. And same for the comic books. They've sort of used similar storylines where they've destroyed everything with the knowledge that it will eventually be reborn. Like I think in the comics, like the city came back over like Boston or something like that, something crazy. So for me, it wasn't as surprising because I kind of thought, oh,
I guess if you read the comic books.
Yeah, they're probably going to fuck some shit up. That's cool. Yeah, nice.
Do you like their choice of where they'll set up their new home?
We don't know yet,
do we? Earth.
It's Earth. Well, I mean, obviously.
Was that in the post-credits?
Yeah, I think they mentioned
post-credits scene that might get fucked with.
It's probably
what was the post-credits
scene? The post-credits scene was, the first one was just a giant, giant ship coming up behind them, which is Thanos' giant ship, which will lead into Avengers Infinity War. Cool.
Yep.
So I have to assume.
I saw the ship, but I didn't get the reference.
No, some people
I actually didn't either, and I'm sort of pretty into. Well, yeah, but like, when the fuck did we see that ship? Was it back when we saw Thanos for the first time in the first Avengers film?
No, that's fair. But no, it is. It's Thanos' ship. And look, if he's there right behind them, I can't imagine their trip to Earth is now going to go easily.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, that is where they're ideally going to set up their new home. I don't know where they're going to set up. I'm keen to find out.
Yeah. Was it where Hopkins was? Was it where Odin was like, here's home? Oh,
that's good. Because like, he did
what country
say,
was that again?
This could be.
Or did he just mean in general? Where on Earth?
He meant it in general, but I mean, really, that's quite nice foreshadowing for the people.
Yeah.
Are what make the city, not the city.
That's a nice sentiment, but it's also like, if you're going to come to Earth, you're going to need like some kind of clearance to just take over.
Right. Also, when I can't imagine we're going to be great with a whole field of people coming in without some sort of system to, you know, derogate them.
That's why I was surprised that they were like, yeah, we choose Earth. It's like, why don't you pick another
right.
planet?
Clearly, there are a lot of planets out there. Go yeah. find one that's a bit more welcoming than our shithole.
But then I don't really know how things like the Bifrost actually work. Is it something that they could then set up when they find their new base, or
well, so the way the Bifrost works, so obviously they've got the seven realms that they can go to.
Yeah,
they can discover more because that's what Hela wanted to do. She's like, let's go conquer more realms to add to the Bifrost.
Yeah,
until of course the sword wasn't there, so they can go other places.
It's interesting that they didn't choose to relocate inside one of the seven.
Yeah,
although Earth
I guess
is one of the realms.
Is one of the seven. Yeah, one of the seven. So yeah, that kind of works.
That's interesting. I don't know what were sort of the main things that didn't work for you, Kat.
Well. I want to start by saying that I it's like my third favorite superhero film.
Yeah,
I've seen.
What was number two?
Wonder Woman.
Oh, okay, cool.
Oh, maybe I liked Thor more than Wonder Woman.
Ooh,
I think I did.
Yeah.
The Taika Waititi sense of humor is what pushes it over the edge for
me. I mean, that's what makes it stand out. As well as I think Thor does have a bit more of a personality in this one.
In this one, definitely.
This is terrible, but he's also the most attractive Avenger. So he's I've always said he was my favorite just because he's like the hottest, and that's so terrible. Done? Yeah. Who is more attractive than
who's
Thor?
Who's your hottest Avenger?
What about Captain America?
For Chris, what's his name? I don't even know. Chris Pine? No, he's not Chris Pine.
One of the other Chris's. Chris Evans.
Chris Evans. Oh my God, I could fall asleep for days.
I feel like some ladies, I feel like some ladies would go for Ruffalo as well.
Mm. Yeah, Ruffalo would be like a close second for me.
Okay. Scarlet?
Oh, I thought we were just doing boys. But she'd probably come in, Avenger, she'd probably slide in three. And then maybe Robert Downey Jr.? Who else is there?
Yeah, he's in there.
Vision.
Who's
Vision?
Hawkeye.
Oh, Hawkeye's dead last. Jeremy Renner does
nothing. Jeremy Renner.
Nah.
Jeremy Renner does nothing.
Downey Jr.'s dead last.
Who's Downey Jr.?
Robert Downey Jr.
Oh, I thought you said. I don't know what I thought you said. I think I just had a stroke.
I feel like I've got off topic.
Yeah, Iron Man.
No, he's what did I say he was? He's fourth.
Okay.
Fourth.
After ScarJo.
All right, fine.
Okay. Yeah. I'm glad we sorted that out.
Yeah.
Can someone let these men and women know where they rank in my list? Because they really care a lot.
Oh,
I'm
they
pretty
do.
Sure they're all waiting with bated breath.
I hope Chris Evans knows that I think he's number one.
Yeah.
I hope he knows.
It you've let him know on multiple occasions.
Have you actually?
He should
no,
know
I haven't,
now.
But I should.
Oh, okay. But I think if he looks
have I though? I can't remember now.
I hope so.
I think if he looks inside himself, the answer will be clear.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
It'll just see your face emerging in clouds.
What do you think of them using Ruffalo? Because it's cool. They're at that point now in the MCU where they can kind of team up characters.
Yeah, yeah.
Here's the thing. When I first saw the trailer for Thor Ragnarok, I thought it looked like a buddy film.
Mm.
And I was like, that's fucking cool. I like that. Not really what it was.
It's how they presented it too. Like, I read an interview with Taika Waititi and he's like, yeah, it's like a
buddy road trip.
A buddy road trip through space. Yeah. And it's like, no, it's not.
Not really. No.
Not at all.
It wasn't.
Well, someone said to me before I went in there, and I was like, oh, I'm really excited. You know, this buddy film. They're like, oh, Mark Ruffalo is, what's his name? Bruce Banner?
Yeah, yeah.
Bruce Banner's in it like under 10 minutes. Like the Hulk's in it a bit more, but Bruce Banner's barely in it. And
but that's
like,
not really an issue.
Like, no,
I don't think it's an issue. I just think that it was definitely mismarketed, but that was okay because it was what they served us was still great. Yeah. But
yes.
The marketing was a little, or maybe the cutting of the trailer was a little.
Yes. Yeah. As well actually, as they gave away.
That Hulk was the.
Yeah.
That's so fucking annoying. I think we may have talked about this in a previous episode, just trailers annoying the shit out of us.
Yeah.
In particular, like, you know, remember when The Dark Knight Rises showed the football stadium? Right. And
yeah, I agree.
Fucking
this is,
hell.
I think
this is on par with that.
This is easily akin to that. Because, like, they set it up beautifully in the film.
Right.
But I was like, oh, but I already know.
But we
all
know.
The whole time I was like, this build-up is excellent. It's really well done.
Yeah.
I don't know. I'd love to ask Taika what he thinks of that. Because maybe
trailer,
he
wouldn't have had much control.
He wouldn't have. And I bet you it shit him. Because I bet you he's like, I fucking put in all this work to make this build-up this
surprise. How amazing
surprise.
Would that moment have been? Yeah, even because now we saw it a bunch of times in the trailer, so we know it's going to come. But the film spends too much time building
it's
it up.
Right.
It's like, come on, man. We know it's the Hulk. Just hurry up.
Yeah.
Which is fucking fucking so annoying. They could have really, like, because I know they wanted to promote it as like, oh, we've got some Avengers teaming up in this. They should have still said that in the marketing. But then you watch it and go, oh, Doctor Strange for 2 seconds. Right. All right, I get it. Fine, yes. Thanks.
Yeah, which you already knew from the end of one of the other movies.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
keep, like, have chuck a few other Avengers in there for just a scene so they can have, like, this slew of Avengers. So they're like, oh, they show up. And don't put too much attention on the Hulk, so it is a surprise how big he is, as opposed to it being like everyone was surprised how small he was. Make the surprise how big he is.
That would have been like one of those more jaw-dropping, satisfying. Awesome moments.
Yes. And the other thing, like, I assume they did it to get audiences, but as if they're not going to get audiences at this point.
I could see Thor being the maybe people's least enthusiastic. True.
I mean,
obviously not for me.
Yes.
But.
And I think they even wanted to show the humor because that scene's got... beautiful Taika humor, where it's like, I know him from work.
Yeah,
and all the rest.
Great.
Yeah.
So I think they wanted to get the humor across and be like, guys, this is a different Thor, you know, which is great. Definitely show that. But there was a ton of jokes. You could have thrown any one of them in.
Hell yeah.
Yeah, the whole thing was hilarious.
The humor is like the biggest strength of the film, I think, no particularly in the first like 20 minutes or so.
Yeah.
Him spinning around so when he's talking to the guy at the start.
It's such a simple gag, but it's great.
And it works.
Works. Yeah. Yes. Like his hair, for me, it was the way that his hair, there's like one strand. Right. Yeah. Oh my God.
Anthony Hopkins as like.
As Loki.
Yeah, when Thor shows up and he's just like, shit. And Sam Neill and Matt Damon.
All that, yeah. So good.
You didn't recognize Matt Damon, though, did you?
I still can't. That's amazing. I look back, that face is like a blur to me in my memory.
He was fantastic.
Yeah, brilliant.
So the humor carried it a lot in the first half. And I was like, I'm having so much fun. This is great. But then they didn't really, I guess, plant the seeds, like the emotional stuff that you want. But again, a lot of recent Marvel films have kind of been like that, where they're kind of like...
A bit lacking on emotion.
Kind of like an Easter bunny, like those red tulip bunnies you get that are just hollow in the middle. Like they're colourful on the outside, and they taste nice, and they're hollow.
Best analogies I've heard.
Well, that's kind of what Marvel sort of is at the moment.
Yeah, it's a bit of a shell of...
So when you talk about doing like a fix, those are the things... Like often, Demo, we've done like superhero movies, and it's generally the antagonist. It's like there is really no villain plot. They're just kind of chewing scenery.
We're here to be evil and take over the world. Yeah. And you're like, why?
Which is kind of what we've got with Hela.
Yeah.
It's Cate Blanchett.
Yeah. I want to start by saying I really liked it. And I thought that, you know, my apprehension was not misguided. I think I had a good reason to be apprehensive. But I think Taika Waititi completely pulled it off. I think it was a very entertaining film that people really enjoyed. And I think it's a testament. I love him. I feel like I'm just like...
gushing.
I'm just like, oh my God. But I love him. And I think it's a testament to his talent and his ability. And I also visually, like those beautiful shots of the fights... They look like old paintings. So a Kate Winslet would be in the top right-hand corner and then the...
Yes.
You know, anyway.
Especially that one with Valkyrie and they're all coming.
Yeah, coming the other. And there was a couple of things. And that's very... I mean, Taika does a TED talk where he talks about how he used to be obsessed with...
Oh, really?
...with old paintings. He's a beautiful drawer. Like he used to draw dicks. Like a record. But they were beautiful and like anatomically correct and like in a very traditional style. Like a
traditional style
of drawing dicks. They're not your two circles and a
No,
cylinder.
They're
shaft.
They're more veiny.
Oh,
are they?
No, but he's got like light hitting them and you can see the depth and the... Anyway, he's just a very talented man. And that's coming through. The breadth of his understanding, I think, visually comes through.
I'm just lost in the... like, because sometimes a director, when he's talking to like the cinematographer, he'll show him like a painting as a reference and be like, this is what we want. This is the lighting we want. I'm just picturing Taika showing the DOP his dick paintings.
Watch a TED Talk. It's
just like
so
this. Replace
funny.
The dick with Valkyrie. That's kind of what I'm going for.
No, they weren't painting. They were sketches and he was in like school or something like that. Anyway, I'll stop sucking his dick.
But basically, he took all that wonderful artistic dick knowledge and put it into his film. Guy's a legend.
No, he's amazing. He brought the humor, which we knew he would, and we knew he's obviously proven his ability to do that. I think he even extended his visuals, and possibly the budget allowed that. But what I feel like maybe he, and I do think he brought some enough to keep me happy, but not enough to make me be like, fucking best thing I've
Mind
ever seen
blown, yeah,
was
yeah.
was the heart, Sean, which we all know you love.
Yep.
And it's interesting because Taika, his greatest strength as a filmmaker is heart.
Right.
We know. Yes. And interestingly enough, his greatest strength, his boy, debatably his best film, I mean, you know, whatever. But even Hunt for the Wilder People has a similar theme, is challenging father figures.
Right.
And that is exactly what this film should have explored, and it didn't. And that's interesting because it had
set it up,
and he just didn't follow through with it. And it's like,
no, I agree.
We know he knows how to do it. He hasn't just done it once; he's done it twice, and he hasn't just done it. Kind of done it. He's like done it better than any other film I've ever seen in my life. My three biggest issues with the film, and I'm going to fix all three, and I hopefully, guys, you can come and join and help me fix it. Let's because it. Like it's a really good film, so I don't feel like, yeah.
Yeah, it doesn't warrant a full fix.
It's not a full
fix. It's one of those.
It's just like little tweaks to make it better. Yeah, kind of like Baby Driver. Absolutely. Not even as passionate as Baby Driver. Number one. The way that Thor loses his hammer was, it was too simple. It was too easy. Hela just kind of was like, bye to the hammer. And it was like, oh, okay, that was very easy for her to do that.
Because that's a huge thing.
It's a huge massive thing. And like how they did it was kind of underwhelming.
Especially with like the mythology behind that hammer and everything. Like his enemies quake in fear because of how many lives the hammer's taken and things
part
like
of who he
it's
is.
Like it's key to his identity.
Yes.
And it's kind of just this scene where it's like, oh, I guess she's really strong. And it doesn't have any weight.
Yes. It's like, oh, but like, how is she so strong? I mean, I know she's his sister, but like, Loki can't do it. Like,
literally no one else can pick it up.
But it's not even that annoys me. It's kind of that he kind of shakes it off nearly. Like,
he doesn't seem as upset about it.
They have like the good gag with him and Taika's character, his name I'm blanking on, where he's like, oh, you had a real emotional connection with this hammer.
Yeah.
And that's funny.
Which is true.
But he literally did. Like, it should be he's missing
we
a part
seen
of
more
it. Of it.
And it would have been funnier that had we seen more emotional, him get more emotional about it. So I think that the way that he loses his hammer should tie in with the reveal that Odin is flawed. So you know how we find out that he conquered all these and he used Hela to, you know, with her powers to slaughter people. Mm. Oh, and so I don't think the dad should die and then he finds out. I think Thor should discover this quite early on in the film.
Yeah, I like that.
Yeah, so Thor is... Oh, there you go.
Cool, then he can actually address his dad about the atrocities he's done.
I'll just tell you now, Odin's not going to die to the end of my version.
Okay. Yeah.
Okay.
We don't see Odin.
We see Odin. He's very, very weak and ill on Earth, like how we see him in the thing.
Yep.
He's there, but he's not. He's dying. He's not dead.
When do we see him?
Kind of the same time. He's on Earth in the same way that we do in the film.
And is he kind of going a bit senile? Does he still have all his mind? Does he remember the horrible shit?
I think he's all there, but I think he's physically on his way out and he's very weak is the most important thing. Frail.
Is the conversation still the same with his sons, other than the fact that he doesn't die at the end of it? But
sure.
Okay.
I can't even remember what he says. Just something about...
But the conversation's fairly tied into him dying.
Well, then, yeah, he addresses that he's dying and that he's weakened. He does have to say at the beginning, Asgard is the people, not the place for that. Because I think that's beautiful. I'll keep all that. That's
and
great.
He can kind of be addressing it like, you need to prepare yourselves because I'm on my way out.
Yeah, he's trying to prepare them, definitely. He's also, we see him at the beginning, he's dying. You know, Odin is usually, so far in the series... Mm. Quite composed.
Mm.
This is a god that is facing mortality.
Yeah.
Which is...
So rich for...
So Thor is so thrown by his father's discrepancy in morality that it challenges his own ability to judge right and wrong, right? So if the mighty and good Odin can create a weapon like Hela and use it to kill and conquer, then how is Thor to know that he will not fall to similar depths? And if he does, will he know what is right and what is good? Because surely Odin thought he was doing the right thing. And maybe Odin will say that, like, at the time, you know, I thought I was liberating these.
Mm.
You know, I thought I was giving them a better world. And maybe I did, but I still killed a lot of people. At the time, it seemed right. But, you know, when I look back, I realize it wasn't. And so it kind of challenges Thor to be like, should one person possess the greater end of an imbalance of power, which is what he has and what his hammer gives him, right?
Okay.
Should Thor, the successor to a guilty man, Thor who is now the odd one out. So before it was Thor and Odin were quite good and Loki was bad and Loki was like the bad sheep. But now he's looking around and he's like, well, I've got a sister I didn't know about. She's fucking evil. Loki's evil. And my dad isn't as good as I thought he was.
Yeah.
He's the odd one out. And then he goes, well, am I? Is it just a matter of time before Thor fails his people and fails at his title of a hero? Because I like that line that comes in later where it's like, that's what heroes do.
Yeah, they use it throughout the film.
Yeah, it was simple, but it was kind of like, that is sometimes like a really nice mantra for someone to be like, why am I doing the right thing in the face of adversity? Because that's what I've got to do.
And it's a big part of Thor's identity, clearly. That's like the fact that he does repeat it.
I like often the film presented it as a gag, like they made some jokes, but that's fine because then when you use it for a rather serious means, then it just means
it's
more.
It's got the weight doubles.
Definitely. Yeah.
So what I've got Thor, instead of Hela just showing up and tossing it aside, Thor actually willingly hangs up his hammer because he's challenged by this and he's actually gone, doesn't even trust himself now, because this has really kind of thrown him.
Yeah, because he's almost got that thing of, well, power corrupts.
And power
corrupts. What's more powerful than his hammer?
And he's like, I'm too powerful. Odin was too powerful. I don't want to make my father's mistakes.
Yeah, don't want to repeat the sins of my father. Yeah, that's strong.
So he willingly hangs up the hammer, and he hangs it up in that like vault area where the Ragnarok crown was hung up.
Yeah, cool.
He hasn't like destroyed it.
No, he just puts it. He's put it for away. Safekeeping.
But let's be real, like he, in the back of his mind, he knows he can come back and get it anytime he needs it. But he's doing it kind of as a fuck you to Odin, because he's really mad at him about this revolution.
Yeah, it's more symbolic. It's like it's like fuck you, old man. Like, because that's back to the first film. That's like kind of Odin took that hammer away from him essentially.
Right,
it's kind of like when you're worthy, you can take it. But now it's kind of like, well, what is worth and what is that from you? Because you're fucked.
Exactly. Yeah. He's like, you can't even give me the worth. Like I can. It's You are not worth.
What is your worth? Worth.
Like, it's not going anywhere good. But as Hela grows stronger and ultimately is able to enter Asgard. Now, she can, what I was thinking was, and if this doesn't fit with mythology or the rules of the world,
don't stress too much about the mythology. Like, they obviously break
I'm sure they fuck with it anyway. Yeah. So instead of Odin dying, it's more like as he gets really, really weak, that's when Hela is able to kind of come into Asgard.
Yeah, cool. Yeah,
Thor's hung up the hammer. He's fucked off because he's like, fuck you, Dad. As Odin grows weaker and so Hela grows stronger, and ultimately she's able to enter Asgard. She enters the chamber and destroys the hammer, not just because she can, but because Thor's emotional and physical distance renders it weakened. So that's why she's able to destroy
it. See, I like that. Yeah,
so she kind of, she can touch it, she can fuck with it, but it's only because Thor's put it away.
Right.
It's weak. She's then able to destroy it. Mm-hmm. So when Thor comes back and to get their hammer, it's gone, it's destroyed, and he feels a sense of guilt, which I'm going to address in point two. So that's my point one.
Awesome. When he comes back, or are you about to get to that? I don't want to.
No, you go.
So she sort of started to enslave everybody in Asgard and that sort of thing, and so he comes back to fight her.
He comes back to save the day, and it's gone, and I'll go on to that.
Cool, awesome.
For me, I really wanted Thor to have a sense of responsibility in the loss of his hammer. It was too easy for some big bad guy to get rid of it. No, he needed to have fucked up, basically.
Right,
And it's a sense of guilt. Like, I kind of put myself in this situation. So my fix...
Can I jump in? You know, with Odin gone, Thor's basically in charge, right?
Yes. Yeah.
Rather than him putting it in the room where they keep all the stuff...
Trinkets.
The trinket room, if you will. It'd be cool if he just put the hammer down on the throne.
Great.
And then nobody can sit on that throne when he's
not there. That's brilliant. That's
beautiful. Because no one can pick it up.
Yeah, and she can, and but she sits comes, on the throne.
Yeah. Like, it's like a cool image of her trying to take over everybody, and then Thor coming back and being like, oh, I'm going to put a stop to this. And she's standing by the throne, and she actually picks the hammer up, which would just like blow everybody's mind. Yeah. They'd be like, what the fuck?
Yeah. Right.
Because no one can do that.
Yeah. Right?
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
As well as also him having a brother like Loki,
it's
almost a bit of a fuck off, Loki.
Yeah, it's like Loki, you know,
don't even try, mate.
Yeah, that's great. Beautiful. Yeah. All right, my fix number two is Hela. Now, I've already said that it's my biggest gripe. And it's like, you've got Cate Blanchett, like...
Thank you, yes.
Do something with her. She was, I liked what she did with the nothing she was given.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a good way to phrase it.
That's spot on.
Because she made a very, very exciting piece of toast.
Yeah.
In my opinion.
Yes. And a lot of people have liked her character despite, and I think that's like more her. For her than the actual character itself.
I like her hair.
I liked her. I don't think I love the performance, but again, it's they gave her nothing, and so she's just kind of like prancing around the chewing scenery and being evil for the sake of evil, and it's harder, please.
Ultimately, with what they've given her, that was the most she could do. She could just have fun with it and make it a likable villain, kind of like in the sense that, she's so evil and, you know, malicious
Thor,
and everything.
Thor's an interesting one because he's not a bland character, but he's not the most interesting of the heroes.
No, I think this is the most interesting version of Thor we've seen.
Definitely.
But I still think they could actually push it further.
Which is where, like, somewhere like, you know, when Chris Nolan did The Dark Knight, Bruce Wayne is quite bland.
Mm. Yes.
And the Joker is fucking fascinating. Yeah, right. Do you know what I mean? And I just feel this like Thor's where, the kind of franchise where the villains should be really good and they're always shit.
Yeah.
And it's frustrating. It annoys the shit out of me.
I haven't made Hela like a Joker level exciting, but what I have done is taken what was already there and been like, well, there's an obvious answer here for why. And a lot of her fun kind of, like you said, scene chewing kind of stomping around could still stay because I did enjoy it. But I think we just need to explore just like that little bit more of the backstory.
Yeah.
I think maybe as well because I do really like this movie and I like Taika that I want to be like, it's good. It's good. It's fine. Just this little thing as opposed to doing a whole fix to her character. Because that's my point is that it's not a big thing. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Even with Hela, like, the pieces of it are there. Like, the resentment against her father that she's been trapped for all these years. It's there. Just use it.
She doesn't talk about Odin.
Yeah, they make her this two-dimensional weapon who can only act according to the nature that
and
Odin
she,
created
her.
And
her whole motivation should be... So killing him for me, that's a big thing. Killing Odin at the beginning, having him die, before she has a chance to... It's like you've set up a character that clearly has major daddy issues.
Yeah.
She's got to have it out with her dad. You Absolutely. Know what I mean? Like, well, you can't set that up and then... But it wasn't even that it didn't happen, which would have been bad, but which was bad, rather, but...
They didn't allow the opportunity.
They didn't even give us the suspense to build.
Right.
That's kind of like should be the drive of that character that she plays. And
Absolutely.
It's for Thor and for Loki. This film, like we talked about this earlier, this is like a Sins of the Father story.
Yeah.
Like it's got the pieces for that and did Anthony Hopkins not want to participate?
Right. I think that it was like, it. I think he was like, I'm fucking done. I'm I'll do one scene so you can, out of like kindness.
Yeah.
And then I'm done.
Yeah. And with this character,
so much to do with him.
It's double fault. She can be, one, I am the way you made me. You know, you made me a monster and now you rally against it. As well as the fact that he's fucking locked her up for millennia. Like, yeah.
And then you add into that Thor finally finds out what his father was. And it's like, holy shit. Yes. I've like held you up as this higher person in my life.
Yeah, even Hela should almost be able to see eye to eye on that point.
How does Odin have the right to lecture Thor if we go back to previous films?
Yes.
It's fucking staggering. There's so much to chew on. And Kathy, you mentioned it before with Taika Waititi. This is like his turf.
He's like really addressed this material.
The illusion of this dad image being shattered that he's not the hero he thought he was.
Right. To me, that would have been like Taika Waititi probably saw that and was like, this is why I want to actually be involved in a big franchise.
I can see that's why a studio being like, let's find someone who's done it before, who's done Taika Waititi, that's the best example.
But
he's
not credited as writing the screenplay.
Yeah,
I wonder how much Marvel a lot of his personality and his humor is very evident in this film. Perhaps not the storytelling.
That's probably as much room as he had to influence it.
Yeah, entirely possible that, you know, if he was given no restrictions, it might be. Yeah. It might be exactly as.
Because for these storylines, this obviously because they're such part of the intertwining universe, they're planned years in advance.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So yeah, he wouldn't have had a huge amount to do to be able to change.
Marvel have talked about how after Infinity War, they're not going to have phases anymore.
Okay.
Which should be exciting.
What do you mean phases?
Like, because they've done phase 1, 2, 3, where everything's kind of connected. So the idea behind that possibly is that moving forward after the Avengers, hopefully they can do kind of more standalone stuff, which would be great.
Pair ups, team ups. You can kind of got a bit more room to not stick to. Everyone gets a solo film and then we get an Avengers.
Yep.
Yeah.
Because how many, like, this has always been my problem since the Avengers came in. It's like, how can you have the standalone films where there's an end of the world type scenario and it's like, how come you're not just calling all your mates in the Avengers to come and help you? Like, we know why they don't do it logistically.
Yeah, but if I've got an issue, I'm like, well, I know Captain America, so I'm probably going to give him a quick buzz if he's free.
There's the problem, but I mean, like, but fix your villains. What do you got for Hela?
Well, I mean, also, like, Hela, she doesn't seem to give a shit that Odin's dead and this is meant to be.
It should be really either incredibly satisfying for her,
or really
fucking infuriating
because
she didn't
want to kill him.
Yeah. Or even better, a bit of both.
That's even better because that's like.
So Hela has such a clear motivation for me that's already there but not explored. Hela wasn't born the goddess of death. She was born powerful, but not evil. Her destruction was cultivated, grown in her by Odin as a tool. So then, as Odin grew to regret his choices, he turned around and ordered Hela to stop being everything that he fostered her to be, right? This killing machine.
Mm-hmm.
She's like, fuck you. Like, I've done all of this for you. Like, she's looked up to him a lot in the way that Thor does. You know, he's created her to be something. And then one day he's just like, you have to stop. You have to go against everything I've ever taught you.
Yeah.
And just stop. And of course she doesn't, because, you know, no one can just stop being who they've been taught their whole life to
right.
be. Yep. And so when she doesn't immediately stop, which is his crazy, unrealistic expectations, here's where Odin sees his chance for redemption in Asgard's eyes. He uses Hela as the scapegoat for a crime in which they share the guilt. So Hela feels betrayed by Odin, and her lust for blood is not just for evil's sake, but it's out of hatred for Odin. She's a teenager rebelling,
yeah.
A perpetual teenager rebelling. She wants revenge, and ultimately when Ragnarok happens, it's her inability to let go of her hatred for Odin that is her downfall. So what is her greatest strength, right, is this ability to kill and destroy that Odin taught her to do is also her downfall, which I always like in a character where it's like,
your strength is also your weakness.
Yeah, that's a bit of fun. Thor sees this in Hela, and he sees this the same resentment that he's just starting to grow for Odin that is consuming Hela. So a big part of, and I'll touch on this in my next point, but a big part of Thor's ability to let go is the fact that he's like, if I don't, I see where this is going. She's him if he lets this anger grow. At the end, it has a similar ending where she's destroyed by Ragnarok, because I don't think that Thor should try and kill her because he's her sister, and the film never kind of really does anything with that she's his
How
sister.
How frustrating is that?
Oh,
it's
so frustrating.
That, like, it should be a family drama.
Yeah.
And yet the fact that she is Loki and Thor's sister has no impact whatsoever on anything that happens.
No, you could eliminate it from the story and it wouldn't make it.
She could just be the goddess of war.
Right.
And it's the same.
Yeah.
So I think that Thor shouldn't try and kill her because he's really empathizing with her, which I know is maybe not a great superhero like plot. But he's like fuck, like I know exactly how you feel because I feel a lot of the same stuff. Maybe not as much as you, because Odin really fucked you over.
Yep.
So he wants to save her because he also wants to save himself.
Yes. Well, I think Thor should have the option and the ability to imprison her, just like Odin did.
Right.
Oh, that's good.
But he won't do it because he's not his father.
That's excellent. That's perfect. Mm. Yeah, put that in. His big kind of, maybe not argument to her, is that he really wants to show her that her actions, which are in truth reactions, lifelong reactions, are giving Odin the power that she hated him for possessing over her.
Yep.
Great.
Her inability to let go of her hatred for Odin is ultimately her undoing and why she stays on Asgard and how she dies.
No, that's good, because then basically, if you've set it up that Thor has the option to repeat the mistakes of his father but chooses not to, she kind of gets the same opportunity to let it all go.
But she's too far gone.
And, of course, so she continues her version of Ragnarok.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's my fix for her. Like, again, it's not really adding anything to the character that isn't already clearly there. But we just need to actually talk. Like, it actually needs to be, like, expressed in the story and explored.
I would add one more thing as well. If we're going with, like, the family drama side of things. So when she sees Thor, I think she can almost see, like, oh, Dad tried with me, but he fucked up and I went too far and killed everyone. And then he made you instead.
And you've had this charmed life.
The child that he wanted. And
there's a lot of jealousy. And that's maybe a big motivation for why she hates Thor.
Exactly. So instead he's almost trying to forgive her, but she's just not having a bar of it.
Absolutely.
Now, there is more to her ending, but I'm saving it because it ties in with my third fix.
Bring it on. How does Loki sort of, is he just sort of the same as what we saw in the film?
Yeah, I actually haven't fixed Loki.
Yeah. Because
I don't give a shit.
On what you just said, Damon, that's kind of fascinating to think about it, of how Loki approaches all of this.
Right.
And I kind of think that Hela would just be like, whatever, Loki. And that would piss him off. He'd kind of be like, again, he's like, I'm in the shadows again, for fuck's sake. I've had my whole life with Thor, and now there's this one, and she doesn't give a shit about me.
Yeah, great. Yeah, it's really good.
So my third issue, and this is my biggest issue, I think, with the film, because the hammer, like, I was like, oh, they could have done something more fun with that, but or more kind of, you know, emotionally significant with that.
Absolutely,
But at the same time, it was serviceable. It was fine. Hela, it was already there for me.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I could leave that film and be like, oh, that's why she felt that way. I just wanted them to, like, I wanted to see more of it. I wanted Kate Blanchett to show me more of that. And But the big thing was Odin, because like, as we said, Thor just found out that Odin was like really fucking flawed, and he was like, cool, 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 yeah, yeah, no doubt, no doubt. Like, he didn't appear to give a shit.
Jake Peralta'd that shit.
Yeah. I feel like we've said this already in this podcast, but like Taika, like this is what he does so well. Thor's arc with Odin should mirror the emotional arc of Boy, right? He finds out what Odin did and what he's capable of, and he gives up his hammer in an act of rebellion and kind of a symbol of his rejection of Odin in fury, right? Mm-hmm. Because his emotional arc needs to go from hatred to rejection to acceptance to forgiveness and ultimately a separation completely from his father's path and his own.
Yeah.
He needs to ultimately realize that he is his own man. Because, I mean, as Boy is about a boy, you know, and his love for his father, his idyllic love from his father, and realizing that his father's flawed, but he's still his own person, and he's his own person, and he can love a flawed man.
Yeah.
That's what Thor needs to go through. Exactly that same. And that he is separate to his father. Yeah. So it's okay for him to love him, because that doesn't make Thor weak, and it doesn't make Thor destined to make the same mistakes.
Yeah, that separation means now that he's in his father's chair, he's not going to do what he did. Yeah.
Well, it's massive for Thor, because the Thor trilogy has been so much about him living up to the expectations of his father.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And so the film just absolutely had to do more with that. Like the fact that he finds out that his dad is a fucking mass murdering piece of shit, basically.
Yeah. Yeah.
And covered up their history.
Yes.
Like Thor comes back towards the end and the marble roof has fallen down and you can see everything, and it's like he doesn't shrug to it, but he almost does.
Yeah.
It's like it's a non-factor for him.
Yeah, he should be seeing like,
barely addresses it.
Yeah, well that should almost be like his father's taken off his real face and there's this scarred, horrible version underneath.
Yeah,
like it's
definitely.
That sort of
I would almost tweak Odin at the beginning and have Odin not be accepting of the fact that Asgard is anywhere. It's got to be Thor. I think it's got to be Thor that comes up with that idea of the people of the home.
Yeah.
My father would probably never give in and our people would be destroyed, but I'm better than my father and I'm going to move us because Asgard is the people.
Again, and that's another separation of being more than his father could be.
Definitely.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So we know Thor's initial reaction is to hang up his hammer, and that's kind of the rejection element of this arc. But when Hela shows up and needs it, and he needs it, and it's gone, Thor is now forced to confront, he kind of does it in the movie, who he is without his hammer, who he is without his connection to his family, who he is without Asgard, because he's thrown out of the universe, doesn't he?
Yeah.
He's kind of like, oh, this hammer connects me so deeply to it.
Which does mirror the first film.
Mirror the first film, and it also is kind of, it does touch on that particular, they do touch on that in the film. He blames himself, as he kind of should, for hanging up the hammer. And he realizes that giving it up was actually selfish. He thought at the time that he was being selfless, but it actually was because it was an act of rebellion, right? Mm. It was a message rather than a genuine thing. He's like, fuck, I actually kind of was selfish, and which makes him go, oh, shit.
And he did leave the hammer behind for Hela to take.
Yeah.
Like, it would have been – she's probably powerful enough to have taken it off him, but if he had been there and had it, then
– yeah.
Right.
He's got to think about that, the fact that people have died. Kathy, we talked about, like – you had this idea about Hela really wanting him to join forces with her and that sort of thing. Is that still a factor in this? Is that kind of she'll banish him to the planet where he ends up finding Hulk and all that sort of thing? But is it more of like you go off because I know and you know deep down what you are. You're just like our father. You're just like me. And when you're ready, you'll come back and join me.
He's saying like, do I have darkness in me?
Right.
Absolutely.
She can play off those
and she wants him because...
Oh, you know why that's perfect too, Kath? Because that's the Hulk. He has that darkness inside him. So that's perfect that they team up, and it's like it's Thor examining that and seeing what it's like to be torn apart by what you are inside.
Mm. Yes.
Yeah.
It's fucking crazy.
That's great. This sense of like inevitability of darkness that's going to come out, and it's uncontrollable and unknowable.
Yeah.
Yep.
Which is a big thing with the Thor, because Bruce Banner never knows what he did.
And and Hela's going through the same thing.
And
but she
wants
thinks
to
it is unavoidable.
Thor, I think, as well, because that's the ultimate fuck you. Her ultimate fuck you to Odin is to take
his
shining.
Oh, to turn the good son.
Oh, yes.
And he's still alive as well, so she still can.
Yeah.
She's still just, she wants to fuck Odin up, basically.
Brilliant. Love it.
So Thor's being like, fuck, you know, I was so afraid of doing something wrong that I didn't realize that what I did was selfish.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
What's more, who is he now? A god powerless to protect his people. Before he was a man surrounded by questionable morality, now he's nothing.
Yep.
So it was like, you were in a shitty situation before, but look how much worse you made it.
Yeah. Mm.
he is powerless.
Yep.
Which is a very unknown feeling to Mr. Fuller.
Yeah.
We see a lot more. I think it's important. We see a lot more of the people suffering at Haller's hands because it kind of like we see him escaping, but we don't see them like being fearful before they escape. I think we need to see a lot more. Yeah,
like the common people, because we see the soldiers obviously get just taken down completely. Yeah. But again, there's no human element to that.
And I think Thor needs to see more of his right. people suffering.
Yeah, as well as so she it's killed really twisting like, that knife in she him. Killed like the Fabulous Three or whatever they're called.
She killed his friends, but just going back to the commoners, when they came on screen, I was like, oh. There are commoners.
Ooh, yeah.
I thought everyone was a god.
Have we seen them yet?
No.
So that was interesting. Yeah, and we probably need to see Thor have some sort of relationship.
Like interact with
people.
Him at some
yeah.
point.
Because yeah. it means more. But yes, yeah. his three friends and mysteriously Lady Sif's not in the film. No. Don't know why.
Yeah.
Was that explained in Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.? Who knows? Yeah, but they died and that annoyed me so much because Thor's not there when they die, but he comes back later and right. they just needed a scene where he walks past their dead bodies and he fucking, like it hurts
he
him.
He mourns yeah. them.
Because
yeah.
these are his best friends in the right. whole world.
Yeah.
They're like, they've been like brothers essentially forever.
Yes.
That annoyed
and
the
it gives
hell
him,
out of
him. It gives him more reason to actually attack and kill her.
Yes.
And imprison her the way his father did because he's like, he's got vengeance.
Absolutely.
So then even when he rejects that, it's even more powerful because
fuck yeah.
she killed his three best mates
yeah.
over here.
Damn yeah. straight. Just on characters as well and not quite doing enough with them. Shit, I can't remember the Valkyrie character's name. It's called
oh,
Valkyrie.
I can't either.
Fuck. But anyway, great character. Jinx. I really liked her.
Oh, I loved her.
She was awesome.
Yeah,
like
she
when
was
she was drunk and stuff,
a thing
hilarious.
That. I thought no, she was great.
I'd go a little bit further because they kind of hint at, you know, when she talks about how Hela beat them and stuff, they were hinting at like perhaps she, like something happened there. And all it was that, you know, she survived that battle. But right. I thought it was going to be like...
Her friend took a arrow or
something. Yeah, no, but they hinted at something more. And I thought it was going to be that she had done something cowardly or something like that and spared herself and got away with it. And now it was her arc was like a redemptive arc. But it kind of wasn't.
That would have worked too.
Survivor's remorse is really what it was.
Yeah, just like giving that a little tweak would have been like, all right, cool, now she's a better
character. And also her being cowardly might tie in a little bit more now how she is at the beginning of the film morally dubious.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So if it's like, well, she's always had this within her, but she can choose to be a hero.
Yeah.
Just like Thor.
Right. See, that would be perfect.
It's connects.
Yeah. Absolutely. Awesome.
Okay, so we see a lot more of the people suffering. As Thor sees it, he realizes that his good intentions were actually selfish and a pure heart can cause pain, just like someone else that we know, which is Odin. As Thor's hammerless existence, which is a hilarious sentence.
I feel like I'm living a hammerless existence, but I didn't realize until just now.
I feel like until I met my dog, I was living a hammerless experience.
Oh, it's so beautiful.
Yeah. I love it so much. As Thor's hammerless existence forces him to see what is human about him, it also forces him to see what is human about Odin.
Oh, great.
So Odin is weakened throughout the film. I actually really love that line where he's like, you're not the god of a hammer, you're god of a thunder. Instead of it being a vision, which was whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
He needs to actually go see Odin. And I think they need to have that conversation face to face. And I think this is the point where Thor's like, he's actually about to die. And I think we need to see at this point, so this is sort of in the final act, we need to see Odin suffering immensely.
Right.
Really mean to these poor actors. But I'm like, you need to see the frailty. And I think that would be really confronting for Thor, but also for us as an audience to see.
I'd like him to die legitimately, fade away to golden dust.
No, I got you.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Here we go.
Okay. Odin is hanging on, right? His body is like ready to go and he clearly wants to kind of let go, but he can't because he has to make things right with Thor and with his kind of, he is also kind of eaten up with this guilt that he's lived with. He's more okay with it because he's spent a long time coming to terms with it, but he's struggling more so with the way that Thor sees him, which is, you know, that's heartbreaking as well. Like a father trying to get redemption from their child. Ugh, that breaks my heart.
Yeah.
In this moment, in the moment of seeing Odin hanging on for Thor, even though he's physically so weak, he's actually seeing strength in him. And he's seeing the strength that underpins Odin, that through it all, he will at the end of the day do anything for his children or for Thor specifically. But you know what I mean? Like that bond is so strong, even though they've had like, they've gone through this really kind of tumultuous little journey recently, that he still would put his body through agony to hang on to make it right with Thor. And this is how Odin chooses to make it right with Thor. He chooses to kind of appear, I don't know how he travels, apparate.
Yep.
Right in front of Hela, maybe in the throne room, and he sacrifices himself. He allows her to kill him, sacrificing himself in order to quench her thirst in revenge. He's like, you can kill me, and then that's what you need, right? Yeah. You're so angry and you never let go of that anger. You have to have your revenge. I'm going to let you, so that you will let Asgard go. So she kind of, I don't know, maybe stabs him and he like stumbles down into Thor's arms or something dramatic like that. In his last breath, he says, so he has that same line, but I've added something to it. He goes, you are not my shadow. You are not the god of the hammer. You are the god of lightning. As Thor realizes he is not destined, and in this moment that he realizes he's not destined to make his father's mistakes, he's able to forgive him. And in this clarity, he's able to harness his full potential. And that's when he wields the lightning power, because I'm okay. And he's at peace with it all.
Does Odin even have to, do you say, like, does his teleport thing or something?
No, but to get to Hela.
Yeah.
Well, Hela could go to
him. Just have Hela come to
Earth. No, he goes to her because it's him. Because Thor doesn't know, right? So Thor's okay. Talking to him and he's like, come with me. I'm gonna show you.
But just in terms of getting Thor, like, so Thor's like up there, he's fighting Hela, and then he's like, I got to go have a talk with my dad. And he goes back down.
No.
Do you know what I mean? Like, it might just be easier if Hela and Thor are fighting and then she's kind of like, well, I'm going to kill Odin.
No, because Odin comes to her because it's Odin's choice to die at her hands.
Him sacrificing.
It has to be him going to her. That's really important because it's him sacrificing himself. And because that's his redemption as well. That's the that's the ultimate sacrifice, is to allow yourself to be killed.
He can still sacrifice his life, though.
Without her killing him.
It's just kind of messy, though, if you don't do Thor having his chat with Odin. Like, unless Thor's fighting Hela in Asgard and then Odin appears and then he has the chat with Thor and talks to her there, that sort of thing.
Yeah,
I don't know.
It could be like that. Sure. That works.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I can get behind it. Maybe I don't know if Odin deserves redemption.
Well, but it's not full redemption. He's still dead. Like, he's not like on a beach somewhere having a great time. Like, he still is punished and he suffers.
Yeah, and it also doesn't fix his mistakes. Hela's still going to try to destroy everything.
And that's the thing so she kills him and his idea is like, maybe this will save Asgard and I will do anything to right my wrong, including sacrifice myself. But she still has her same arc as in the film. It's not enough because ultimately, getting revenge on this person she's so angry at won't actually make her happy.
Right.
Yeah.
And she still is just like, fuck, I'm not satisfied. And it makes her even angrier and more out of control.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then Thor's like, even though you've killed my father, like, I still want to save you. And she just can't. She cannot let go of an anger. And you realize that it's eternal, right? Mm. Even with her killing Odin, getting what she wants, it will never be enough. So her being killed by Ragnarok is like, probably for the best.
Yeah. No, cool. Brilliant.
Because she'll never be happy. She'll never be satisfied.
There's a corny line in it where Thor's talking to Odin and he's like, I'm not like your father. And Odin sort of pauses for dramatic effect and says, no, you're better, which is very corny, but it's the film needs to have that moment.
It's accurate.
Because of that. Thor needs to still, I don't think he can forgive his dad. I think he's still got to be angry. And
well, not forgive, but like, I think he sees
there's acceptance.
Again, like in Boy, he might not forgive, but he at least sees him for the man he is.
He still did these bad things.
And accepts.
It's acceptance, but it's not forgiveness of the deeds that were done.
Not for a second.
But that line's crucial because it's you're better than me. Because then, when Thor has the option to destroy Hela, it's kind of like no,
he never does.
You destroy yourself.
Yeah, brilliant.
I'm going to save our people.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So those were my three fixes. The other two things, like sort of issues I had with the film that I was hoping I could open to the floor.
Yep. Your little bugaboos.
Little things that annoyed me. Number one was fix the friends dying, which we kind of touched already. Because they kind of just died and then it was like, again, no one was ever sad about it.
No, I think it was the same thing as Hela destroying the hammer. It was meant to be like, by the way, guys, she's really powerful.
Yeah,
we get it. Yeah. Like, obviously, she's the goddess of death.
As soon as she showed up there, I was like, oh, well, they're all dead.
You're right. Yeah. And she can even come in and kill them. It just needs to have more weight.
Mm.
Yeah, it needs Thor arriving at the end, seeing the dead bodies, or even better, if we go back to the idea of having Thor leaving the hammer on the throne, blah, blah, blah. He comes back to face her. I'd like him to lose in front of everybody. It's that humiliation, but it's also fear because to them, Thor is... He's the best.
Yeah.
Nobody can beat him. He's got his hammer. She should kill the three friends in front of Thor, and he can't do anything about it.
Right.
And then she destroys the hammer and banishes him to the Hulk planet.
Yeah, bring it all in the beginning. That kind of first act turning point and make it just like a bloodbath.
Better would it be if he witnessed it?
Right.
Like,
and then he goes to this planet with that fucking furious rage. It's exactly what she wants because she's like, good, you're going to become me. You're going to come back.
Yeah, it's inevitable. And he hates himself for it as well.
That's probably the simplest sort of fix to that.
Yeah, for sure.
That's good.
All right, my very last grievance with the film, and this again is not a big grievance, and we've already sort of touched on that a little bit, was I was like, the Hulk is in it actually a lot.
Yeah.
I wanted to get a little bit more from him. Like when he fights the wolf at the end, every other character we got like the emotional kind of significance of their individual little battle at the end, like, you know, with Valkyrie, obviously. And even that guy, even Hala's little servant man.
Oh, yeah, Carl Urban. He was great.
Was really that Carl Urban?
Yeah.
He looks so different.
Yeah, well, that's bald, I guess.
The best.
He's fucking so great. Good. Yeah, he was excellent.
I did not. Wow. Yeah. Okay, anyway.
Yeah.
That was shocking. Yeah, but Hulk fighting the wolf, I was like, oh, that's just like a cool thing. Like, I didn't feel any significance in that. And I was like, oh, look there. I didn't need it. I felt there was room for a little thing. But we kind of talked about Hulk being a representation of what Thor was feeling.
Yeah, that adds a lot more to him.
Maybe we could talk a little, maybe the film could touch on that a bit more about that comparison between the two.
Yeah.
It wasn't a big grievance because I didn't feel like I needed it, but I was like, there's room here. Maybe also because the Bruce Banner and Hulk haven't got their own film. I was like, I could go on a little emotional journey with these characters.
Even something as simple as like Thor can land a killing blow on Hela and he's furious before he comes to terms with like, nah, I'm not my father. And he can even just like look over at Hulk and Hulk can give him a look and that's kind of all you need.
It's just like a little tweak on that, like a little bit more.
I get what you mean. Like him fighting the wolf is cool, but there's everyone else is having like an emotional fight.
There was significance for them.
Whereas and his is just kind of like,
oh, it's a wolf and you're a big green thing.
Like, yeah, I mean, I guess you could have a bit of a like, if you know, the Hulk is the beast within him and then he's fighting this actual beast in wolf form.
Yeah.
You could have something there, some connection to him fighting the beast. I mean, ultimately, what I think would be good, and I don't know how you'd pull this off, but if Hulk couldn't beat the beast, but Bruce could.
Oh, yeah, good.
But again,
that would be so cool.
I don't know how you pull that off.
I don't know how you pull that off. But if you had some way for Hulk to battle at this thing, but the wolf is too strong.
Well, he's a scientist. Yeah. Some sort of potion.
Yeah.
Beat it some way like that.
Maybe
even like they don't give enough weight to probably the wolf. They kind of need to do more with the wolf's connection with Hela would be nice.
Fenrir is a huge character in the mythology.
And then it means more emotionally.
Yes.
But even if it's like, and I mean, you probably have to tinker with the mythology here, but if the wolf is quite small, and then it grows for the battle, kind of like the Hulk. And then so you have him defeat it, and it shrinks down when it's dead, and he shrinks back to Bruce. And it's kind of this touching moment where it's like, we were both animals. And you know what I mean? Something something a little extra like that.
There's room there for something really cool.
Yeah.
But yeah.
That's the thing that is maybe a little bit frustrating about an otherwise very, very entertaining film is that it's all there. Like I feel like the setup and the context is all there. It just, I didn't quite feel like they did enough with that emotional stuff.
Yeah.
And Odin's death really shit me. I really feel like he needed to die at the end, you know, and sacrifice himself. I don't know. For me, I liked the idea of him sacrificing himself, but there needed to be more significance in the way in which
Definitely.
He died.
Yeah. I think probably in summary, a really fun, entertaining movie that was very funny and the characters were great. It's the best Thor film that there's been.
Yeah.
It's one of the better MCU ones probably, certainly the more entertaining ones. But it just didn't have... which is a problem that a lot of these MCU movies have, didn't have the emotional weight that we really want to make it a really great film rather than just an entertaining one.
Yes.
And for me, just quickly,
MVP,
Jeff Goldblum.
Oh my God.
Literally, my favorite.
He was just playing Jeff Goldblum.
Oh my God. I mean, even like the hair and I mean the makeup and everything. My favorite bit in that whole film, like no joke, like I thought about it for days, was that one line that must have been improvised because it's just madness when he was like, on other planets, I'm a million years old on this planet. And then he
extreme awkwardness.
He just grins like loopily, like, oh my God. It made me laugh so much because it's just madness. And like, I think we're all Jeff Goldblum in a little bit. Like, I could relate to that.
You talk about the MVP. It was his sidekick character that kind of annoyed me a little bit because she's so good in Hunt for the Wilder People.
Yeah.
And in this, I kept waiting for her to be like really awesome and she was just a bit shit.
She's a literal one-note character.
Yeah.
No, she was the straight man to his – well, she wasn't that straight, but she was the straighter man to his loopiness. And it was like
– which wasn't the best role for her.
Get a straight man. Don't get like someone who we know is bananas and hilarious.
Right, great comedic actor. Yeah.
Although I did like – you said this the other day. I liked how when she – I think she kisses him on the cheek or something.
The Valkyrie girl kind of like brushes his cheek and Jeff Goldblum just goes, whoo. Like,
have you read anything about Jeff Goldblum?
No.
Apparently he just like is always like touching women, not in a Harvey Weinstein way. Like, and he's just like a crazy flirtatious man. Yeah. And it's if you get on a plane with him, he'll like hit on all the
hostesses.
And he's just like this really like ladies.
So he's just like he is in Jurassic
Park. Yeah, I feel like that was like they were just filming him. Like he probably would have reacted that way normally.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
I mean, that's just what I've read recently. I've read it, but the article I read it on as well, like his wife was like, oh yeah. Like, he loves women.
That's him. Yeah.
That's just Jeff. But he was my favorite part of that film. I mean, he didn't add a lot to it, but it emotionally, but very entertaining. And on that note, I have been Kath.
I've been Damien.
I've been Carney.
If you have any thoughts or opinions, please feel free, or comments, or if you just want to say hi, please send us an email to moviemaintenance@sanspenceradio.com, or find us on Twitter at mmsanspence. Or on our individual Twitters. I'm at KathAtkins5. Or if you want to say it to my face.
Never get this
wrong. You can come to my art gallery at Brunswick Street Gallery running from December 8th till the end of December.
I'm at Midday Pajamas.
I'm at Psychic of Dowie.
Thanks, guys.
Cheers.
Thanks for listening. If you want to help support the show, why not become a member at sanspantsplus.com and get early access to our shows, a bunch of exclusive content, and much, much more. That's sanspantsplus.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
When everyone's on the same page, getting things done at work is easy. No matter what you do or what industry you're in, how you communicate is key. Everything you type is equally important to collaboration, and Grammarly can help. Think of it as your AI writing partner, empowering you to communicate effectively and efficiently so you can make a bigger impact in the workplace. 96% of Grammarly users say it helps them craft more impactful writing. And as the gold standard of responsible AI, Grammarly is your secure AI writing partner that allows your team to make their point and move faster. By understanding your writing and context, Grammarly provides relevant, personalized suggestions. And with tone suggestions, you can navigate even the most difficult work conversations. You can also save time from spending hours editing drafts to just seconds with one click. Sign up and download Grammarly for free at grammarly.com/podcast. That's grammarly.com/podcast. Easier said, done.
Want your most burning finance and investing questions answered? Here's a podcast you should be listening to, courtesy of Acast Recommends.
Are you ready for some personality in your personal finances? Hi, I'm Janice Torres Rodriguez, Latina money expert and host of the award-winning podcast, Yo Quiero Dinero. On this show, we're serving up POC-friendly personal finance knowledge, always with a side of sass. We're not talking about avocado toast and lattes on this show. We've got real, relatable personal finance knowledge that makes you feel seen, heard, and finally understood. Consider me your super cool, slightly risque, but always honest financial fairy godmother. Together, we'll tackle dinero in a fresh new way so you can finally become poderosa with your dinero. Check out our weekly podcast episodes at YoQuieroDineroPodcast.com or subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.